Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not going to be sitting.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, another look at a fascinating week in the Capitol. But first, wish I was there. The co-chairman of the Joint Finance Committee, Representative John Nygren, says it would expand Wisconsin's welfare system to take federal money and add 82,000 more to the Medicaid rolls. Senator John Erpenbach counters, if you make $9 an hour, that's a poverty wage and you need Medicaid benefits. Governor Tony Evers says DNR, on his watch, will again trust scientists to act like scientists. And General Dunmar testifies on how the National Guard investigates sex assaults, and meet the young woman who wants to be Wisconsin's first female Eagle Scout. Wish I was there. Expansion of Medicaid. Your Republicans say no way.
The Republicans are never going to support an expansion of welfare, especially in an environment where the economy is doing very well. There's hundreds of thousands of jobs available. Addiction and other type of mental health, should we target our dollars towards that? Yes, I think we should. I think those are things that we can support, but just overall expansion, no.
Somebody making $9 an hour doesn't qualify for Badger Care. I would consider that $9 an hour poverty, yet they don't qualify for Badger Care because we're not taking the expansion of Medicaid. And to me, that's just ridiculous.
What we would be concerned about, however, in this budget is that a lot of the funding for additional programs is really found through limiting the manufacturing tax credit. Penalizing the manufacturing community is just not the right way to go to raise additional funds.
In addition to putting people back in place and making sure that they have a science background, we also have to, frankly, unleash their knowledge. We have scientists there for a reason, and that is to inform legislators about how science impacts their policy decisions.
There's simply no place for sexual assault in the military. No place. We have a SARC, a sexual assault response coordinator, that are specially trained to get them the care they need, to try to start to help them heal physically, spiritually, and mentally from that event.
AB 41 can alleviate the harm caused by criminalizing sexually exploited children by prohibiting the practice of charging minors with prostitution.
AB 68, SB 66, which updates our current cyberbullying statutes. Current law is intended for just email and assumes that a person is themselves. This bill corrects this in two ways. It adds a type of conduct that are not currently prohibited and expands the law's coverage beyond just email.
We come before you to object to AB 76, which proposes reducing training hours needed to become a certified nursing assistant in Wisconsin. We believe that passage of this bill would reduce the quality of care in nursing homes and in home care settings.
On February 1st, 2019, the Boy Scouts of America took another historic step by creating a pathway for girls to pursue the rank of Eagle Scout through the Scouts BSA program. I hope to be among the first female Eagle Scout in our state and want to be an example for other girls who come after me.
Okay, last week, as we talked about, Dane County Judge Neese voided all the lame duck laws and appointments. Mm-hmm. This week, it was a Court of Appeals, District 3 out of Wausau, which said, we're going to stay Judge Neese's order. And I found, when you read the opinion, just two sentences. Whether laws enacted during extraordinary sessions are valid is a constitutional question of first impression. This mm-hmm. is from the opinion from District 3. It was not necessary for Judge Neese to conclude that the legislature was more likely than not to prevail. So then you have the statements from both the GOP leaders. The rule of law has prevailed. Independent judges have put a Dane County ruling on hold that was based on politics, not the law. What I find intriguing, JR, is the briefing schedule laid out by the District 3 Court of Appeals covers all the month of April. Mm-hmm. So number one, they intend to take the briefs, perhaps hold a hearing before they rule, they're not going to immediately certify what they call a case of first impression to the state Supreme Court. Your take on all this back and forth?
Don't forget that while this stay put those laws back in place, there's a separate decision from Dane County Judge that put other pieces of the lame duck session on hold.
We'll get to that topic.
So, one, I never imagined when I started covering politics 19 years ago I'd spend so much time in court or reading briefs. Two, I don't know the fallout of this is going to be because, remember, Governor Evers rescinded appointments last week and then appointed some people, and then this stay comes down saying that decision's on hold from Judge Neese. So what happened in that window? Was that window open for Evers to act? I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV, so I don't know what that means. However, we are going to be in court for a while about what's happening with this, and I will bet you, not very much, that we're going to have the Supreme Court. Because if I bet you a whole lot, you're going to take the bet, right? We're going to end up at the Supreme Court.
We're
going to
end up at the
issues.
Supreme Court. I'm not going to take your money.
And when's it going to get there? And who will be there when it goes there?
Right, because Justice Abramson turned. It goes on through the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be the current 7-member court.
Plus either Neubauer or Hagedorn.
Well, neither one of us are attorneys, but I'm just... If they call it a case of first impression, you and I have seen the motions. Because this is a case of first impression, there's no precedent here. We hereby ask the state Supreme Court to take it. They have not so far done that on District 3 Court of Appeals.
So it's interesting. Look, you know, Republicans have kind of joked bitterly at this point that this is how a bill becomes a law in Wisconsin, right? They pass something, governor signs
Attorney
it.
Attorney General Schimmel, yes.
Dane County judge overturns it, and then they go to the appeals court process. And, you know, Voss and Fitzgerald, which we've talked about, you know, independent judges. Well, there are two of those judges who were appointed by Governor Walker, and they went to Third District Court of Appeals for a reason.
Right.
They thought they had a more receptive audience there than the Fourth District, which includes Madison, is more liberal. But in the end, yeah, the Supreme Court's going to have final say in all
and
this
And by
stuff.
The way, we should point out that in the ruling in which they issued the stay, District 3 Court of Appeals said, we're going to keep this case.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to stay right here and not go to District 2, where, excuse me, that's Judges Neubauer and Hagedorn, or District 4, which is Judges Blanchard and Sherman
and Kloppenberg.
Okay. Now, let's talk about this dance of the appointments, mm-hmm. because after we taped the show last week, Judge Evers issued an order rescinding all 82 appointments that had been submitted by former Governor Walker and confirmed by the state Senate. So that wiped out 82. But now yesterday, we got an order that we're going to talk about right now saying 62 of those 82 are okay, although I have a question whether the state Senate has got to reconfirm them. What do you think?
Well, it depends on how you view what happened. And now, again, not being a lawyer, let's go through the timeline.
Yeah.
Judge Neese strikes down the lame duck laws and the appointments that they were null and void. That means that during this stay that he issued, mm-hmm. there's a window where the law was what it was pre-December, which meant that Evers had the power to rescind those appointments and also to pull the state out of the lawsuit, or order Josh Call to pull out of the lawsuit over
ACA.
So he took advantage of that window to rescind the appointments on Friday. Now, Republican lawmakers had asked the court to address the appointment issue. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but in reading the decision that came down the stay, I didn't see an explicit line saying those appointments are back in place. But the lawyer for Republicans argued in a letter to the Evers administration that was clear from the ruling. And again, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't say either way. But to them, that stay issued by the Third District Court of Appeals put everything back the way it was, then the appointments were back in place. So what next? I don't know. Because that letter warned Evers against doing anything to violate the order. So they're going to go back to court and ask for clarification. Are they going to file a new action? I don't know. As we sit here Friday morning, I don't have anything yet in my inbox. But that might be the next step.
Well, okay, but let's focus first on the 62 that were reappointed.
67.
Thank you very much for the correction. Largely, those are people that regulate their part-time or volunteer jobs. Mm-hmm. They regulate physicians, nurses, optometrists, psychologists, pharmacists, dietitians, things like that. There's a member of the state fair board. But then you have at least one very critical appointment. Mm-hmm. And we have a three-member public service commission that regulates utilities. And the proposed Walker had wanted former DOA Secretary Ellen Nowak to have that job, mm-hmm. but she was one of the 15 that was not reappointed, and she said it's really unfortunate because we're supposed to be an independent agency. She tried to show up for work yesterday and was told no because of the legal uncertainty. Go ahead.
She sent an email to them Wednesday saying, in light of the third district court appeal stay, I expect to be back at work tomorrow, have my email access restored, and oh, by the way, get back pay for the days I was prevented from coming to work.
Yeah.
She showed up. They said, no, you can't come in. So now what? It's interesting, too. Evers didn't reappoint the two regents that Walker put right. in place toward the end. That's more of a long-term thing. Now, if you look at the roster of regents right now, I think I counted up one time. Governor Evers wouldn't, like, have control of the Board of Regents through his appointees until, like, the very end of his first term. By replacing these two, if, again, if it holds up, he hasn't announced who he's putting there yet.
Yes.
It would speed up when eventually the Evers appointees constitute a majority of the Board of Regents versus the Walker appointees. And that would be significant for, you know, policy for university going forward.
Fair to say, JR, at some point, some judge, some court of appeals has got to deal with these 15 who were appointed and confirmed by the Senate and then voided, rescinded by Governor Evers.
Ellen told me yesterday she looked at her legal options. Now, she also pointed out that unlike the legislature, which can, you know, pass a ballot and have taxpayers pay for it, she picked this up on her own personal expense. So there's, you know, a personal consideration there. The other thing you kind of pay attention to is the politics of this. So Governor Evers ran last fall as somebody who's going to reach across the aisle and bring people together. How does this fit with that narrative? Because Republicans are up in arms that, you know, this is another partisan move, in their words, paraphrasing, by Governor Evers. He's not working with them. It's his way or the highway. Same time, Evers said last week he'd likely reappoint most of these people, and he did, and they're Walker appointees. So is that like the bipartisan olive branch? Well, here, these guys were thrown out. I'm putting them back in as a goodwill gesture, but these 15 are the ones that, you know, I think I should have a shot at.
Okay, but let's focus on Nowak for just a little bit more. She had a history of working for Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
She was legal counsel for the Speaker,
yep.
and then she ended up, when Governor Walker was defeated, as DOA Secretary. So partisan, big R, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's, they're all partisan appointees, the PSC.
Yeah.
So she also worked for Paul Farrell, county executive, I believe, out in Waukesha County. So she's long history in Republican circles. But there was a last-minute move to put her in that position because the guy who was there before was like, look, if Governor Walker's not here, I'm not interested, you know? And they didn't want to give up that seat because if he just left, then it would give Evers the power to appoint somebody to fill out that term by putting Ellen in place. It keeps it as a Republican appointment during the Evers administration.
Right. And let's let the final word be the comment, the commentary from our Attorney General. It is only because of this extraordinary session legislation that we have all of this confusion, including those appointments. Okay. Now, there was a second, as you alluded to earlier, a second ruling by a Dane County judge on a different fact set. Mm-hmm. Judge Neese ruled, to put it bluntly, bills and appointments enacted and ratified in extraordinary sessions, not constitutional.
So he limited it just to that one session.
Oh,
so,
I understand. Yeah. But now, a second suit mm-hmm. filed by unions came before Judge Frank Remington, who I think was a Walker appointee.
Yes.
And he voided some of those, and let's just walk through a couple of those. He said, unconstitutional, a requirement that legislators okay settlements of Department of Justice suits. Legislators' new authority over state agency documents also struck down. Legislators' new powers to block state agency rules. And I just want to read two sentences of his ruling, Judge Remington's ruling. Wisconsin's constitution is like a keel on a great ship. In December 2018, the legislature and then Governor Scott Walker upended the balance. The time has come to right this ship of state so Wisconsin can resume smooth sailing ahead. Are we talking about this ruling later in the show because we don't know how this is going to affect the Court of Appeals and the Judge Neese ruling?
Voss and Fitzgerald have vowed to appeal this decision as well. And they're separate kind of cases. The Neese decision is based on basically the operations of the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it can call itself an extraordinary session and pass things Well, has it power to do that? This is more of a balance of powers question.
Separation of powers.
He's saying basically violated that separation by pulling things in the executive branch they should not have done.
Right.
So now what with this one? This is going to go on appeal at some point too.
Right.
Again, not being a lawyer, I'm not going to predict what they're going to do.
And the governor called it an important victory, and we'll let his quote stand there because it's going to seem to be superseded by whatever the Court of Appeals does.
Yes. So it's a matter of when that appeal is filed and where they go. And again, at some point, it'll all fall in front of the Supreme Court, and it'll be their issue to hash out.
Okay. You and I. Okay. New subject. Tuesday, we're going to elect a new Supreme Court justice. The candidates are Court of Appeals Judge Lisa Neubauer, Court of Appeals Judge Brian Hagedorn. You've presided over forums or debates, so have I. So give us a quick summary of the race.
This looked like it was Lisa Neubauer's race to lose 4 weeks. She had more outside backing. She seemed to be in a position, stronger position, to replace Justice Abramson, and Brian Hagedorn had all these Republican groups abandoning him. Now we have this late fusion of cash from the Republican State Leadership Committee's Judicial Fairness Initiative. The question is, what does that money mean? Does that money mean that there's a path for Brian Hagedorn to win, or is it kind of a last-minute effort to try and help him out because conservatives are unhappy seeing him twist in the wind? And this is why I bring this up. Traditionally, when I see spending late in a race, it's not just the last week. You come in for several weeks to burn in a message. If you see an ad campaign for just 1 week, it's harder to get it to kind of stick versus 2 or 3 weeks, right? So this is one big push over the final 7 days. If you're going to do that route, usually you try to overwhelm the other side in spending. And I'm not seeing that. In fact, I think Neubauer, and I don't have final numbers yet, she may have the edge still in the final spending. So what's this money mean? And that I'm not quite sure. It could be that Neubauer has put the race away. There's a path to victory for Hagedorn. That path would include a conservative base that is unhappy about Governor Evers' budget, unhappy about the capital budget, unhappy about the lame duck rulings, who saw the Mueller report even and was jazzed up because they didn't do anything to President Trump. Or even they're afraid of losing control of the court. There's a rallying cry for that base. Is that base energized? Can they capture that energy and do something? Or has Hagedorn been so badly damaged by these ads, these blog posts that he put up? These other things that he's not an appealing candidate to kind of voters in the middle who might decide this.
Okay, but I want to use some history on this because if you look it up, a year ago, now Justice Rebecca Dalit, she was a Milwaukee County judge. She was up against a Sauk County judge, Michael Skowronek. She got, the voter turnout was 22%, and she got 56% of the vote. But here's where I'm going with this, JR. She got, Justice Dalit got one-third of her vote from just two counties, Dane and Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Does Neubauer have the same potential power to do as well in those two counties?
Well, the thing is, it's a different environment and different candidates. So with Dalit, we were kind of in the building the blue wave of 2018, right?
Yeah.
She talked openly about values. She threw punches on crime. I mean, just a different candidate than what Neubauer is. Neubauer is running a very traditional Supreme Court campaign, talking about your experience and your endorsements, staying away from talking about issues. I mean, these are what we saw 12 and 15 years
ago.
She's
running a make-no-mistakes campaign.
Very much so. You know, assuming you can ride the environment or ride what's going on. So as you don't have to excite the bases in Dane and Milwaukee counties, well, the flip side is, does she have to? Because Brian Hagedorn has provided plenty of fodder to do that with his blog post, with his comments on the campaign trail. He's sending a message that he is the conservative. And oh, by the way, the RSLC has a new TV ad that features Donald Trump, which is a message to the conservative base that Hagedorn is Trump's guy. It also, though, has a message liberal base that Trump, that Hagedorn is Trump's guy. So how's that?
Correct me if I'm wrong. A year ago, didn't Justice Dalit run ads against mm-hmm. Donald Trump?
Yeah.
So now Dalit runs ads against Trump, and now you have the Republicans invoking Trump as a backer of Hagedorn?
Again, I get the impression that there's a narrow path for Hagedorn to victory, and it is gathering this energy, whatever it is out there with this conservative base, and getting motivated to turn out. If they can do that, there's a path. If they can't, there probably isn't. So that's what I'm kind of watching, you know, what's this look like? You know, the other thing is all these groups that backed away from Hagedorn, if he, let's just say he loses by 2, 3, 4, 5 points. Mm-hmm. A lot of finger pointing in the conservative circles going, okay, we could have won this race, but you guys sat it out, you guys sat it out. So I don't know, something to kind of watch. Again, not saying he's going to lose for sure. But if that comes to happen, it's a close race and he loses, watch that finger-pointing start before we talk next Friday.
And as you talk close races, I just want to say again, Dalit won with 56% of the vote over 44%. Let's not end this discussion without saying that they will be replacing a legal icon on the Supreme Court. Former Chief Justice Shirley Abramson, longest-serving justice, 1976 through 2019, longest-serving Chief Justice, 1996-2015. So they will have some very interesting shoes to fill.
And don't forget,
whoever wins.
Hagedorn has made a central piece of his debate performance attacking Shirley Abramson, again, sending a message about to conservatives about who he is as a candidate, but also potentially alienating people who, you know, like Shirley Abramson.
Okay. Now, I want to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau released its 479-page report summarizing provisions of the governor's budget. Let's just focus in on their prediction on the gas tax. As we all knew, the governor wants to raise our gas tax 8 cents a gallon from 30.9 to 38.9. Now, the new analysis by the Fiscal Bureau says when you also do what the governor wants, when you index a gas tax over 2 years, which that is tie it to inflation, that would take it up another 1.6 cents. And then let's also remember that he wants to increase the registration fees on heavy trucks. He wants to increase the by $10 the fee to title a vehicle. And he wants to finally get around the state collecting the hybrid free surcharge for a total of $608.4 million in transportation fund tax and fee increases. Now, we're going to hear from the governor in a minute, JR, but do you think Republicans are in any way, shape, or form helped by this LFB prediction that you're going to take up the gas tax almost 10 cents?
I don't know it has any impact because they were so kind of not really that engaged or not impressed with the proposal in the first place. One thing really caught my attention, Fiscal Bureau does not take a position on whether repealing minimum markup has a fiscal impact on the price of the pump.
Yeah, and you know what, JR, thanks for getting there because I'm just going to show the cover of this. This is the 479-page analysis by the nonpartisan Fiscal Bureau of the governor's budget. And the reason I'm holding it up, on page 41, JR, here's what they say about we can't score, we can't estimate the repeal of the minimum markup. It's one sentence long. Changes in retail fuel prices as a result of the repeal of minimum markup, if any, would be subject to a variety of market and competitive factors which are assumed to exert considerable influence on final retail prices independent of the statutory markup. So even though the governor told us as reporters, his team, we're recommending 8 cents higher on the gas tax and indexing, we think repealing minimum markup would reduce gas prices by 14 cents. Fiscal Bureau says, we're not touching that.
Well, and I asked people before this came out, like, if this was, you know, what was going to happen. And I've told several people, hey, LFB in the past has not scored this either way.
Right.
They didn't expect him to do it this time, and they didn't.
Right.
Because there are all these competing factors. So it doesn't help the Evers push for repeal without having LFB saying something. At the same time, I don't know, it changes the dynamic at all because Republicans, legislatures, still don't seem to be embracing the call for a gas tax hike, at least not overtly. So I don't know where it goes from here.
Well, it's time to hear from the governor. He was asked about this Fiscal Bureau report. Almost a 10 cent increase in the gas tax. Here's what he said. We're going to hear that right now, but let's note before we hear from the governor that he doesn't talk about repeal of minimum markup potentially. He doesn't say, as his aides told us in February, that it would potentially drop gas prices by 14 cents. But let's hear from Governor Evers, please.
According to the LRB, the gas tax will be raised up to 10 cents by 2021. Are you concerned that there's going to be pushback on that from Republicans?
8 cents a gallon is where we started out with, but we also indexed it right from the beginning. That's the way it used to be, and that's the way we want it to be in the future. So, no, I don't think we're going to get any more pushback because of that than what we're doing now. The bottom line is people know that we need resources for our transportation system, and they know that those resources have to come from someplace. We can't borrow it.
And so we propose a budget that will have the lowest amount of borrowing in a long, long time, and it will fix the roads and give money, more importantly, give a lot of money to the municipalities to fix their roads.
The Joint Finance Committee, they have 16 members, 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats. They've now announced public hearings that will begin next Tuesday and Wednesday in the Capitol, but those will be limited to agency heads, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Now, if you want to go to a public hearing, the schedule is now available, and let's talk about next Friday in Janesville at the Pontiac Convention Center, and then Community Center in Oak Creek on April 12th, UW River Falls, April 15th, UW Green Bay, April 24th. All those public hearings will begin at 10 o'clock, and I again want to encourage anybody out there, if you want to access this document, 479 pages, nonpartisan summaries of the governor's provisions, go to Legislative Fiscal Bureau and then Publications, 2019-2021 budget there. Mr. Lang, we promoted your agency. Anyway, it's a good opportunity. Now,
don't forget, though, with Nash about the briefings next week, JFC is only having certain agency heads come in.
Thank you.
And encouraging the standing committee's legislature to appear from other agencies, which include the UW system, one of the biggest ones in the budget, is not being asked to come before Joint Finance and testify.
Right. Right. The process begins. Okay, now let's talk about your stock picks.
The Supreme Court money, let's put some meat on the bone. I kind of laid out a little bit of the Supreme Court race. Trying to go through the numbers, I don't have a complete picture yet because we have independent expenditures, which are the express advocacy, vote for, vote against. When you do one of those kind of ads, you have to report that to the state. Mm-hmm. If you do issue advocacy, you know, call Steve Walters, tell him he's a great guy kind of thing, you don't report those. So, for example, the RSLC we've talked about, their Judicial Fairness Initiative. I have so far detailed on the website, the state website, about $890,000 in spending. That includes $512,000 in TV, detailed so far. They can add into it. They said it'd be a seven-figure expenditure. There's also going to be some mail on there, the stuff, so watch for that. About $257,500 on digital ads. Okay, that's a big chunk of change. Greater Wisconsin, however, now, they do a mix of issue advocacy and express advocacy. My sources tell me they're at $2.4 million for TV ads between March 5th and the April election.
Wow.
That includes a final week, $790,000. All right? So again, I talked about before about how you're not seeing the conservative side overwhelm the liberal side. That's an example of what I'm talking about. But we have lots of little groups. I mean, not little, but smaller groups doing stuff. Americans for Prosperity, $206,000.
On behalf of Hagedorn.
Other Hagedorn groups, Freedom Works, Wisconsin.
Yep.
They're doing peer-to-peer text messages and other things, $26,000. Wisconsin Family Action, $26,000. On the other side, we've seen reports from Planned Parenthood for Neubauer, $124,000. For Our Future for Neubauer, $98,000. Wisconsin Conservation Voters, $100,000. So again, I don't have like a good total picture because I don't have the issue advocacy, but from what I've been able to count so far on the state website, there's more money being spent for Neubauer. So just something to kind of watch. Who, by the way, Neubauer had raised $1.7 million through last reporting period. Hagedorn, $1.3 million. Neubauer boosted by $250,000 of own money, but I'm seeing, we have this called late contribution reports.
Yes.
Donates $1,000 or more.
Yep.
There's a late surge of money for Hagedorn. Again, are they trying to capture that energy? Is that going to make a difference in the last bit? It might.
That's a good call. Rising amounts of cash as we close in on Tuesday's election. Mixed.
So Chris Abley,
Milwaukee County exec.
He played last fall in his backyard. He created a group called Leadership Milwaukee, played in primaries, played in general elections, spent money. He's got a lot of money in his pocketbook that he can spend. Now he's branching out to Madison. People are going, what is that all about?
Madison mayor's race?
Yes. He put $47,000 into a group called, actually, Leadership Wisconsin, Parallel Leadership Milwaukee, put $47,000 into Conway Rhodes, sorry if I said it correctly, who's challenging Paul Soglin.
Yes.
So $47,000 in mail. So the question is, what's he up to?
Some people don't have a clue. This is news to me.
Yeah. Some people are going, hey, wait a second. Is he trying to set up a way to run statewide someday by branching out? Because, you know, Abley's a unique politician.
Yes.
Most people like Scott Walker, for example, or Jim Doyle, they came up through the ranks. You know, they spent time in office. They built a network of supporters, and they do this thing where, hey, you know, if you can back me on this, I'll back you on that. And not horse trading, but they build relationships, like build support, right? Mm-hmm. Ailey didn't have that. So in getting involved in races in Milwaukee, he's trying to buy it, right? Well, what's he doing going to Madison? Well, I was told, look, it's simple. He's backing somebody who would become the first openly gay mayor of Madison. He is the chair, national chair of the LGBTQ Victory Fund. He spent close to $200,000 to help the first transgender state lawmaker get elected in Virginia in 2017. This is a cause near and dear to his heart.
Oh.
That's why he's playing.
Okay.
But there's still suspicion, because anytime you get somebody in Milwaukee playing in Madison, he's going to raise some red flags. But right. I was told, look, Abley's playing in Milwaukee is about building that network and also about building friends and knocking down enemies. This is purely about a cause he believes in.
That's fascinating. Okay, you got 30 seconds to falling.
Look, at farmers, you know, we've talked about milk prices are difficult. It's been a bad run for them. There's a series of stories being done by some Wisconsin outlets about, like, the state of our farm economy. One provision, one of the stories talked about a farm family that started a GoFundMe page.
Yes, to try, I read that. It was fascinating.
Try and cover their expenses.
Fox Valley area.
That's how bad it's getting for farmers.
Yeah, that's a good call. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for March 29, Vote Tuesday, Supreme Court election.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.